Hello again and welcome to Greek class. This is Greek lesson 3 and I am your teacher, Luke Nagy. And I hope you're really enjoying these. I hope that these courses are giving you an insight into the Greek language. They're allowing you to know and to understand and to grow. So I hope these are meaningful to you. If you have any feedback, I'm always happy to hear it. You can send some feedback through the website, or I'm assuming that you already know me, so, you know, let me know how this is going. But we're going to continue on today with Lesson 3. Now, in Lesson 3, we're going to introduce the noun. We're going to learn some vocabulary. We're going to get some practice translating, and we're going to work on nailing the basics. Today, as we learn the noun, we're going to be looking at the second declension masculine form. Second declension masculine form. Now, that sounds really complicated, the second declension masculine form. What's a declension? You know, what is this? Well, to put it in a pretty simple way, a simple explanation is that in English, and we've already mentioned this, in English, you know what a word does in a sentence based upon its place in the sentence, by and large. We know that if you put a word at the beginning of a sentence, it's almost certainly the subject. If you put a word after the verb, it's normally the object or some kind of object. Well, in Greek, you can change the order. And what they do is they change the morphology, M-O-R-P-H-O-L-O-G-Y. Morphos is just the Greek word for form or shape. And so the way that the words are formed tells you what they do in the sentence. That's morphology. So the example I always like to use is, you know, I hit Steve in the head with a chair. Okay, now in English, everybody who's a native English speaker knows exactly what I mean in that sentence because of the order of the words. The order of the words tells you everything. If I say, Steve hit me in the head with a chair, that's a very different meaning than I hit Steve in the head with a chair. But what do we have? All of the elements are the same. I am in both parts. Steve is in both parts. And in both sentences, somebody is getting hit in the head with a chair. So what's the difference? Well, first of all, in English, I switches to me when you switch from the subject to the object. Oh, but wait a minute. That only works with some nouns. Some nouns, it doesn't. If I say Steve hit Bill with a chair, and Bill hit Steve with a chair, the only thing that tells you who's doing the hitting is what order they are in the sentence. And that can get kind of confusing sometimes if you want to change the order of the sentence. Well, in English, you can't. You can't really change the order. Unless you want to do Yoda speak, you know, and Steve hit in the chair by Bill he was. You know, you can do that, and you can make everything passive, and you know, there are certain ways to do that, but it's not really common, and it's not really useful, and it's kind of confusing. Well, Greek, to do this, Greek, like many other languages in the world, Latin, for example, and most of the Latinate languages, except for French, which is fun. French and English kind of have that going together. French and English are kind of word order-based languages. Well, in Greek, there are what are called cases. Now, the cases are ways that you change the form of the noun that tell you what the noun is doing in the sentence. Now, there are technically 5 cases. Some people argue for 8, but there are 5 cases. Only 4 of them are we going to learn. There are the 5 that we focus on are the nominative, the genitive, the dative, and the accusative. Now, there's also the vocative. We'll talk about the vocative in a second. The nominative case is the case of the subject. Now, in English, there are 3 cases. There's the subjective, the possessive, and the objective. Or you could also, in English, say the nominative, the genitive, and the objective. Those are the 3 cases in English. Well, in Greek, there are 5 cases. Nominative, genitive, dative, accusative, and vocative. We are not going to bother learning the vocative. One, for a couple reasons. First, it's rare. Second, it's self-explanatory. Third, if you wanted to learn how to, you know, compose, how to write in Greek, you could probably learn it, but I don't think that's, I don't think it's that hard to do. Secondly, we're not going to spend our time doing it. I mean, you have more important things to learn right now. So, the four cases. We're going to work on four cases for us, okay? Nominative, genitive, dative, and accusative. Normally abbreviated NGDA, and it's always in that order. You've got to always get that order. Nominative, genitive, dative, accusative. Now, what are the nominative, genitive, dative, and accusative cases? What do these things actually mean? Well, here's what they mean. The nominative case is always the subject of a sentence or a clause or a phrase. Whatever it is, if there's a subject, it's in the nominative case. The subject is nominative. So, if I want to say, I hit Bill in the chair, who's the subject? Well, I am the subject. Why am I the subject? Because I'm the one doing the doing. Okay, the one doing the doing is the subject. Now, that's obviously different in a passive formation, but we're not talking about passive forms. We're talking about active forms. The standard form of English, of the standard verbal form of any language, is the active form. That's where everything's based out of. So, the subject is the one doing the doing. Now, what is genitive? So that's nominative. The nominative is the subject. The subject is the one doing the doing. The genitive case is the possessive case. Now, this is confusing. If I say it's the possessive case, you're going to think, oh, well, you know, my chair, my and chair are both possessive. They are not. If I'm using that example, I hit Bill with my chair, or I hit Steve, or I hit whomever, I hit somebody with my chair, my is possessive. Chair is not. Chair would be another indirect object. But here's where it is interesting. If I want to make what's called a chain, a construct chain is what it's called in Hebrew, or a genitive chain in Greek, that's where you really want to use the genitive case. Now, there are other uses of the genitive. In fact, there was one great Greek grammarian who said, if you understand the genitive, you've understood Greek. Or they've also said, if you understand the participle, you understand Greek. Well, anyways, you know, people say that about the infinitive, I think, too. Long story short, the genitive can get kind of confusing, right? The nominative case is pretty straightforward. The accusative case is pretty straightforward. The dative gets a little confusing, but the genitive is where, this is where the tricky stuff happens. So the genitive case shows possession. The genitive case also shows the relationship of or from. So, in fact, if you want to say, if in your markings, when you're learning the genitive case, if you want to just remember that the genitive case is always of or from, and you can also like make an apostrophe S to show possession, that's a good thing. So if I want to say the man of La Mancha, you know, we're talking about Don Quixote here, the man of La Mancha, well, the man of La Mancha is a genitive construction, of La Mancha. So in Greek, if I want to say angels of the Lord, it would be angeloi theou, because theou is theos in the genitive. Theos, it's theos, theou, theos, theou, okay? Theos is nominative, theou is genitive. We're going to get to this in a little bit. But you can do multiple chains. You can say the apostle of the Lord of the world. You know, the apostle of the Lord of the world. So it'd be ho apostolos kuriou kosmou. Okay, the apostle of the Lord, or I'm not giving you the articles right now. We'll get to that later. The words. But, you know, if you want to say an apostle of the Lord of the world, apostolos kuriou kosmou. Okay, so an apostle of the Lord of the world. So you can do genitive chains. Of or from. He's the man of La Mancha. He's the apostle of the Lord. These of things, these are also genitive. It's not just to show possession. Okay? But that's how we can remember it. It's the quick and down and dirty way of remembering the genitive is that it's possessive. Okay? The dative case is the indirect object. The indirect object. So in the example, I hit Steve in the head with the chair, or Bill, or Brian, or Doug, or whoever you want to pick. Marty, you know, I can hit Marty in the head with a chair, okay? The indirect object, and this gets confusing in English, the indirect object is related to the noun. It's related to one of the nouns with a preposition, okay? It's not the direct object. It's an indirect object. So the dative case will never be the subject. And it's never going to be the direct recipient of the verbal action. That's the object. The object is the direct recipient of verbal action. So I hit Steve. Steve is directly receiving the verbal action. What's the verbal action? It's hitting. Steve is directly receiving the hitting in the head. Now you could say, well, the head, I'm hitting him in the head. So the head is the direct object because the head is directly receiving the verbal action. Well, that might be true in a broader sense, but in a linguistic sense, it is not true. What is directly receiving the verbal action, according to the way that sentence is phrased, is Steve is being hit in the head. Steve is receiving the verbal action. Now, in his head modifies that verbal action. It modifies the noun. It modifies the recipient. It modifies the accusative case. Because now we know how or where Steve was hit. He wasn't just hit just in general with a chair. He was hit in the head with a chair. And this makes sense. If I say, I give a book to Billy, I give a book to Billy. Now, in English, we want to say that Billy is the direct object. Billy is the one receiving the verbal action. Nope, he's not. Billy is an indirect object in that statement. Why? Because what's receiving the verbal action of giving? Now, we want to say that Billy is receiving the direct verbal action of giving. No, he's not. The book is the thing being given. The book is the thing being given. Billy is related to the book by a preposition. So a good way to remember the indirect object is if the word to or for, if you can kind of translate it and put to or for next to it, then you know that it's the indirect object, right? I give the book to Billy. I is the subject. Give is the verb, and that would be present active indicative, first person singular. I give the book. The book is the direct object. The book is directly receiving the verbal action to Billy. Billy is the indirect object because to Billy is describing to whom the book is given. Okay? The accusative case. The accusative case is the direct object. Now, we've talked a lot about the direct object. The direct object directly receives the verbal action with no intermediary. So whatever is receiving the verbal action, that is the direct object. I give the book to Billy. The book is the direct object. I hit Steve in the head with the chair. Steve is the direct object. I run over Brian with a tank. Okay, these are kind of violent, but violence is easy to remember, I guess. So I guess that says something about human nature. I run over Brian with a tank. Okay, Brian, the city of Brian, is the direct object because it's receiving the verbal action of being run over by the tank, okay? If I say, I teach a class, okay? The class is the direct object. If I teach Greek to the class, oh, see, that's, notice the difference? I teach a class, class is the direct object. I teach Greek to the class, oh, is class still the direct object? No, the class is now the indirect object. If I say, I teach Greek to my class, I is the subject, teach is the present active indicative verb, first person singular. Greek is the direct object. I'm teaching. What am I teaching? I'm teaching Greek to my class. To class would be a direct object. My is a possessive pronoun modifying that. So my is genitive. Class is dative. Greek is accusative, and I am genitive, or nominative. So, now remember, in English, we express these relationships with different word orders and inflections, and sometimes we imply these things. That's done by implication. In Greek, the form of the word changes. The form of the word tells us the word's function. So, we don't have to guess in Greek what the different parts of speech are, what these are, just by guessing, and we don't do it by word order, we do it by the form of the word, the way the word looks. So we're going to learn the declension. We're going to learn the second declension masculine. Now, when we learn declensions, I always want you to learn them in a certain order. I want you to learn them in the nominative, genitive, dative, and accusative order. And you want to be able to distinguish your singular from your plurals. Now, I do nominative, nominative. So I'll do nominative singular, nominative plural. Genitive singular, genitive plural. Dative singular, dative plural. Accusative singular, accusative plural. Some people prefer to read it singular, 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 then move on to plural, singular, 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 singular. So they'll do NGDA, singular, NGDA, plural. I do singular, NN, singular, GG, singular, DD, singular, AA. So as you can see in your paper, and you can learn these either way, but always remember NGDA. It always has to be in that order. Now, whether you learn all the singulars together and then all the plurals together, or whether you cross over singular to plural, doesn't matter. But you always want, when you're making your own charts, you always want them in that order: nominative, genitive, dative, and accusative. Now, in the long run, you're going to see why. Now, right now, that won't make any sense, why you have to put them in that order. But trust me, this is the order you want to put them in. It will make sense later. Okay? So, the singular form of the word logos, hologos, or however you want to pronounce it, is the word. Okay, so we're gonna read down the singular, and then we're gonna read down the plural. Now, like I said, I actually prefer it the other way. I prefer to read them side by side, but you know, hey, we're all limited by technology. So, nominative singular of logos is logos. The genitive singular logou, or logou. The dative singular logo. The accusative singular logon. Plural, nominative, logoi. Genitive, logon. Dative, logois. Accusative, logus. So you have, if you want to do it the way I like to, where it's nominative, nominative, genitive, genitive, it's logos, logoi. Logu, logon. Logo, logois. Logon, logus. Okay? You can do it whichever way you want, but have you noticed something here? Have you noticed that the first three letters never change? The lambda, omicron, gamma never change? Well, they won't change. All you're changing is the suffix, okay? That's the cool thing about this. You only need to learn the suffixes. Now, if you want to learn the suffixes with the rest of the word, that's totally okay. If that's how you want to learn your declensions, that's totally cool. I only learned the suffixes when I was learning it. You know, and a lot of people do it that way. Some people want to learn the whole word. Some people want to learn the suffixes. It doesn't matter. But for me, what I learned was os, oi, u, on, o, ois, on, us. Okay? So that way, I just went nominative, nominative, genitive, genitive, dative, dative, accusative, accusative, os, oi, u, on, o, ois, on, us. All right, you want to learn these. You want to memorize these. You want to have these drilled into your head, because the better you are at declining your nouns, the better you'll be at translating, the better you'll be at understanding, and you want to be able to do this. Now, once you get going in Greek, once you really start reading, a lot of times you're not even noticing these things. I know it sounds crazy. They're like, how could I never notice these things? You won't notice them. You'll just be reading and you'll just understand. A lot of it is just understanding from context. A lot of it will be, you already know that passage of the Bible, so you know what to expect. You don't have to really translate. You're just kind of guiding yourself through the text. All right, so today we're looking at these. Now remember, last week we talked about the verb, okay? So just a quick review of the verb. I don't have this in the paperwork, but you can always go back and review. So the verb, the suffixes of the verb, we'll do the whole thing. So we're going to do singular, we're going to do first person, second person, third person, then we're going to do plural, first person, second person, third person. So luo, lues, lue, luomen, luete, luusi. Luo, lues, lue, luomen, luete, luusi. Oese, omen, eti usi. Oese, omen, eti usi. Okay, that's the conjugation of the verb. That's the present active indicative conjugation of the verb luo. What we are learning today is the declension of the second declension masculine noun. Logos, logoi. Logu, logon. Logo, logois. Logon, logus. Okay, so remember, you don't change the root, that lambda, omicron, gamma part, you don't change that. You only change the suffix. Once you learn the suffixes, you're going to get really good at translation really fast. I promise you that. So, again, one of the keys to learning any language is vocab. We're going to do a little bit of vocabulary review, and then we're going to learn some new vocab, and then we are going to get into some translation exercises, and then we're going to have some read for practice. Okay? So, last week's verbs. Akuo, I hear. Blepo, I see. Gnosko, I know. Gruffo, I write. Fellow, I wish, will, or desire. Lego, I say or speak. Luo, I loose or destroy. Pisuo, I believe. Now, again, I don't know if I mentioned this last week. I know I mentioned it in the actual class, the physical class. But remember, whenever you have a diphthong, remember, is when you have two nouns, two vowels that come together, and the two vowels come together to make one new sound. So epsilon upsilon would be e-u, or e-u, 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 piste-u, o. Well, e-u, when you put epsilon and upsilon together, they make u, like y, like in English, the word u, pistuo. Now, whenever you have a diacritical mark over a diphthong, it always goes on the second letter of the diphthong, the second letter. That's going to be important in just a little bit. We're going to see why, okay? Okay, so continuing our vocab, we have some nouns. We just had some verbs, now we got some nouns. Ho Theos, the God. Ho Jesus, the Jesus. Ho Adelphos, the brother. Hey Adelphe, the sister. Okay? We have a few special words. We have Kai, which means and. Choti, which means that or because, and uuk, meaning not. Those are just three forms of the different word for not. And someday in the future, we'll talk about why there are three different forms for the word not, but not today. So the new vocab for this week, let's work together on these. And the standard French is écoutez et répétez, listen and repeat. So I will say to you, Acuete, kai legete. Listen and speak. Nouns. Huanthropos. The man. Hodulos. The slave or servant. To ergon. The work. Or deed, to ergon. Ho thanatos. The death. Ho kurios. The Lord. Ho logos. The word. Ho nomos, the law. Ho oikos, the house. Ho uranos, the heaven. To technon. Child. Ho huios, the son. Now note the rough breathing mark at the beginning of huios. See, remember the second letter of a diphthong is the one that's pronounced, the second letter of a diphthong. So we have the diphthong upsilon yoda, and the second letter has a rough breathing mark. It's received the diacritical, and you notice it's a rough breathing mark, so it becomes huios. Not huios, huios. Continuing, we have some conjunctions to learn. De means and or but. We're going to spend a lot of time talking about de in the future. Ala, but, also means but. Translate these sentences. Huanthropos blepe adelphon. Douloi pistiusi logon nomu. Ho Theos lege kai ho adelphos doulon acue, hoti he adelphe technu grafe adelpho. Jesus ou lue nomon, ala Jesus kai Theos luusi thanaton. Ergoi curiu blepomen. O thanatos theu u blepomen, de ho logos Jesu lege, Hoti hothanatos ulue ton huion tu theu. Now that last one, I gave you some tricky words here. I gave you two words that you don't know yet. Okay, but I believe in you. I think you can translate this, and I think you can guess your way through this. Okay, I think you can guess your way through this. Especially note the words you don't know. Look at the ends of the words. Look at the ends of the words, and I think that you'll be able to figure this out. Especially if you look at the word to ergon in your vocab. Okay, so it's giving you some pretty big hints. Okay, then I want you to compose these sentences in Greek. I destroy a house. Jesus desires servants. Brothers and sisters write because the Lord says or speaks. The brother sees God. You don't write the death of God. We say that God desires sons and brothers of Jesus. Jesus speaks to God. A sister sees that the brother destroys works of children. We believe God. I say that Jesus hears the works of brothers. So, not the coolest sentences in the world, to be honest with you, but it's getting practice. So, if you say, Luke, those are weird sentences, yeah, they sure are, right? They sure are weird sentences. But they're going to give you practice with your nouns. They're going to give you practice writing. It's going to be helpful, okay? So, what I've also done, if anybody is out there who is super advanced, anybody out there who is just, you're a go-getter, you're really jumping on it and you want to try some translation, I've added a little more space here for you to take notes. You know, it's not a bad idea as you read for practice maybe to make notes underneath of words that you recognize or things that you recognize, and that will help you. Don't just read for practice at this point, as we're really starting to learn. Don't just read for practice to get familiarity with the sound and the rhythm of the language. That's good, and that's the key part. But also, spend some time looking at words that it's like, oh, I think I know this word, or I should know this word, and you can make notes of those, and that's good to do. Okay, that's good. So let's read for practice. We're continuing in John. I've also this week I've left the verse numbers in, so if you want to check your own Gospel of John chapter 1, you can find these different verses a little more easily since I left the verse numbers in. So, let's read for practice. John chapter 1, verses 35 through the end of the chapter.
Te epaurion, talin este ke ho Ioannos, kai ekton metheton autou duo, kai emblepsas to Iesu, perepetunti lege, ide ho amnus tu theo. Kai, ekousen hae doi methetoi autou, la luntas kai ekalothesan to Iesu, strafes deho Iesus kai theasamenos autos, akaluthontas lege autois tizetete. Hoi de epan oto, ravi, ho legetai me thermenumenon didaskele, pumenes. Lege autois erchiste kai obseste, ilsan un kai edan pu mene kai parautu emenon te chimeran ekene. Hora en hos decate. En Andreas ho adelfos Simonos Petru es ekton duo ton akulosaton para ies Ioannu kai akulothesanton auto. Χιορίσκε χούτος πρώτον τον αδερφόν τον ιδίον Σιμών καί λέγε αυτού, χιορίσκαμεν τον Μεσσίαν, χω εστίν μεθερμονούμενον Χριστός. Εγάγεν αυτόν προς τον Ιεσούν, εμπλέψας αυτό χω Ιεσούς επέν σου εσιμών χω χουιος Ιωάννου, σου κλεθέσε κέφας χω ερμενιουέται Petros. De epaurion ethelesen ex althin eston Galileon kai hurisce Philippon kai lege auto ho Iesus aculuthe moi. En deho Philippos apo Bethsaida ectes poleos Andreu kai Petru hurisce Philippos ton Nathanael kai lege auto hon egrapsen mus Μοούσες εν τον νόμο καί οι πρόφετε χιορισκάμεν Ιεσούν χουίον του Ιωσεφ τον από Νατσάρετ kai epen autu Nathanael eknatsare dunatai ti agathon enai lege auto Philippos ercho kai ide eden ho Iesus ton Nathanael erchomonon pros auton kai lege peri autu ide alethos Israelites en ho dolos uk estin lege auto Nathanael pothen megnoskes epikrithe Iesus kai epen auto pro tu se Philippon phonesai onto hupote suke edon se apokrithe apto Nathanael rabbi sue ho huios tu theo su baselius eto Israel apokrithe Iesus kai epen auto Χωτι επον σοι, χωτι έδον σε χουπακάτο τε σούκες, πιστιουές, μετζον τούτον χωψέ. Καί λέγε αυτού, αμέν, αμέν, λέγω χουμίν, οψέστε τον ουράνον ανεογάτα καί τους άγγελους του Θεού αναβαϊνόντας καί καταβαϊνόντας επί τον χουίον.
Well, that's our text for today, and as you probably heard, I made a fair few mistakes in the reading, and that's okay. That's to remind you, it's okay to make mistakes. You don't have to be perfect. I am far from perfect in my Greek reading, okay? You just read it. Get your practice. Read it out loud. The more you practice it, the more you get the feel for the language, the better off you're going to be and the more confidence you're going to have with your Greek. I cannot tell you how many seminary students, people who are really good at translating Greek, were terrible at reading it because they never put any effort into it, and it made them lack confidence. Okay, so read it. Read it out loud. Read it with confidence. And even if you don't say it with confidence, pretend that you have the confidence. Say it loud. Say it proud. Get some experience reading it. Get some experience trying to translate it. I hope you've enjoyed lesson three, and I hope that it will help you gain your understanding and really enjoy your knowledge of Greek. So thank you. God bless. Bye.